Okay, the next case is Bobby Rogers. Is Bobby Rogers present or is counsel?
Bobby Rogers and counsel are both present.
Bobby Rogers has 38 years of service. He's employed by UPD. The sustained allegation in this case is a BCI violation. The range is a letter of caution to 1 and 1.5 years. Baseline is 6 months, and post is recommending a letter of caution. There are no aggravators, and the mitigator in this case is that he did not disseminate the information. On June 28, 2019, Bobby Rogers was, and I'm sorry, there was no criminal case also. On June 28, 2019, Bobby Rogers was administratively investigated by his agency for a BCI violation. The administrative investigation disclosed that Rogers read a news article that stated that a local police agency was serving a search warrant on a home. The home was not in the city that Rogers' agency had jurisdiction over. Rogers searched the address that the media had released by checking it through the county assessor's office and located the name of an owner of the home. Rogers then conducted a record check on the name of the homeowner on his department-issued computer. Rogers accessed the driver's license of the homeowner. During the Garrity interview with Post in his department, Rogers admitted to using his department-issued computer to access the driver's license of the homeowner of the residence. Rogers admitted that he was not asked by any person or department to assist in the investigation. He admitted that at the time he accessed the homeowner's driver's license, the homeowner had not been publicly named as a person of interest or suspect in the case of a missing female. Rogers said he's a law enforcement professional. He has a right to know information about criminals. He also admitted to being properly trained on the proper use of UCHS. You have just right to a hearing. And Post recommends a letter of caution in this case.
Mr. Rogers.
Yes, sir.
Look,
first off, I'd like to thank the council for this opportunity for me to, for me and you to address this matter. On the evening of June 26, 2019, I signed on duty at 2136 hours to begin an overtime graveyard shift in Riverton. At the time, Riverton City had opted out of the Unified PD, so the month of June, all patrol shifts were made up of officers working constant manning overtime shifts. At about 0400 hours, while reading a recently released news article on KSL.com concerning the missing female, Mackenzie Larrick, from Salt Lake City, I read that a search warrant regarding the missing person was being served at 547 North, 10th West in Salt Lake City. No suspect information was posted at this time on that article. While acting with a legitimate law enforcement purpose, that being obtaining information, with the intent to assist or possibly assist in any manner with the missing person, I used the Salt Lake County Assessor's website, which is a public website, to input the home address listed in the article. The Assessor's website returned the name of the homeowner as Ajola Aja, and I'll spell that. It's A Alpha Yankee Oscar Lima Alpha, last name Ajay Alpha Juliet Alpha Yankee India. At 0406 hours, I entered Ajay's name into my department-issued MDT, which provided back to me his driver's license information, any vehicles that were registered to him, any protective orders, and any warrants that he might have had. Nothing returned other than his driver's license and his vehicles. I did look on his driver's license and observed his photograph. I concluded my investigation. That was the end of it. At 0600 hours, I went off duty, went home, and went to bed. On June 27th, 2019, at 1000 hours, KSL released an article naming the homeowner as a person of interest. I began another overtime shift in Riverton at 1400 hours on June 27th. I read this article when I was at work. And then on June 28th at 0920 hours, KSL posted that Ajay had been arrested and booked into the Salt Lake County Jail on a charge of murder. He is currently sitting in jail awaiting his trial for murder. I had been following this high-profile case for a few days as it was breaking news. which is what was my interest in the case. I want to clarify that from June 27th, 2019, when I ran his information, until July 10th, 2019, approximately 13 days, when I was called into my commander's office and informed that I was a subject to a BCI violation investigation, I had not ran his name again through the MDT, nor had I specifically entered UCGIS to run any criminal history or background information on Ajay, nor had I copied or disseminated any of the information I gathered from the June 27th access to anybody. It was only for my information. The only reason for my search on the morning of June 27th was to gather law enforcement information as a law enforcement professional to include the identity of a murder suspect, which I now possessed, his name and a photograph, which I feel is clearly a legitimate law enforcement purpose. Finally, I would like to conclude referencing the report from West Valley City Police Department, who conducted an independent criminal investigation into my actions. And the investigator states, and I'll quote, "Investigation was conducted and found that there was no criminal activity or intent related to the inquiry of BCI records in this case. The case was forwarded to the District Attorney's Office for review. On 8-8-19, West Valley City PD was contacted by the District Attorney's Office and advised that they were declining to screen any charges against Bobby Rogers as the facts do not support criminal prosecution." And with that, I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to address the facts of this case.
Any questions for Mr. Rogers?
I do have one.
Yes, sir.
So the issue here, do we understand the problem here? Because it sounds like you're asserting that there's nothing wrong at all here.
I'm asserting that law enforcement professionals should have access to information on murder suspects.
You and I could debate that all day long, though, but actually the legislature has issued statute giving us better direction than that.
And I understand
so
that.
So we understand what the issue is. Was a letter of caution appropriate here? Are we going to be dealing with this again?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Is a letter of caution appropriate, or are we going to be dealing with this again because you disagree with the direction of the state legislature?
No, this is my last step in this process. I'm willing to accept your letter of caution. I just would like this panel of law enforcement professionals to see and look into this and look at the fact that I don't believe BCI is so narrow and restricted that an officer can't run information on there and yet not violate the BCI policies. We get data, and I'm sure you do too, from UHP all over this country on stuff going on. Are we as professionals supposed to ignore that and just forget about it because it's not in our jurisdiction? It's something in New York, something in Philadelphia, something in Wyoming. You know, we are law enforcement professionals in the state of Utah, from the north to the south, east to west. We're all one team, and this information is disseminated. I just happen to be a little bit more investigative based on the night before. The next day, the homeowner was listed as a person of interest. I could have done it the next day, or had I done it the next day, I would have saw that the homeowner was Ajay. 2 days later, he's arrested and named as a murder suspect. I just knew that a few hours before that. All I had was that information as a law enforcement professional. Quite honestly, for a day and a half, he was free. He could have been reading the same articles I was reading. They're serving a warrant at his house. He's still a free man. I knew who he was and knew what he looked like. We never know in our agency here who we're going to run into, how we were going to get involved in one another's crimes. And I just feel that me running a murder suspect doesn't violate the BCI statute. I understand what you're saying, sir, to access it.
I agree with that all day long, but that's actually not the direction you've been given. And the people that are responsible for actually doing those investigations are the ones who get to choose when that information is disseminated, the ones that put it out more broadly. And you know that better than I do, why that happens that way.
And I do understand that.
At the end of the day, though, we need to make sure that we're addressing the issue that's here. That we probably did have a BCI violation here, based on the rules that we've been given, the guidelines that BCI has given all of us in TAC training and BCI audits.
And I'll understand, I understand that. I'll accept that. As from an administrative viewpoint, I understand that. From working out in the streets, though, I think there needs to be a little bit more flexibility based on what I ran, what I'm in trouble for, is running a murder suspect, a man who had been identified as a suspect in a murder. and obviously not at that time, the night before at 4 in the morning, I had 2 hours left on my shift. For heck's sakes, I wished I wouldn't have done that, quite honestly, and just went home and went to bed. And now here we are, almost a year later. I've been arguing this point. I understand where you're coming from, and believe me, it's woken me up. It's directed my guidance a little bit more narrower focused. But to me, I find that problematic. And I understand what you're saying. We could debate it, but that's where I stand. So I appreciate that.
I had a question as well, Mr. Rogers.
Is this Victoria?
It is.
Yeah, go ahead.
So had you been contacted by Salt Lake City or any of the entities involved in this case to assist in any way, shape, or form?
No.
So, and I understand what you're saying. I understand that perspective. I understand that there's perhaps a disconnect between line officers and administrators and legislators and folks that are making these kind of laws. But I think that going forward, are you saying that anytime you read a news article, that you feel it's your prerogative or your responsibility or right as a law enforcement officer to dive into that, even though the primary jurisdiction probably has it covered, as Salt Lake City did in this case?
And the answer to that is no. I would not do that again, not after this year, quite frankly.
But only based on this experience, correct?
Not just only based on this experience, no.
Any further questions?
Yes, Sheriff Noel.
Go ahead, Sheriff.
Officer Fielding, I understand where they're two coming from, but I commend you for what you did. I absolutely commend you for that. And I'm totally on your side 100%. You were there doing exactly what you're paid to do as a police officer. You were looking it up. You may not have followed exactly what the legislature done, but as far as I'm concerned, they got it wrong. And you did what you were supposed to. You weren't doing anything mischievous. You were out there looking to see if you could help. My heavens, you work in the county where the murderer was at. What are we doing condemning this officer? I'm going to put in a recommendation that no action is taken against him.
So at this point, I have to chime in. So House Bill, I'm trying to pull it up. House Bill 43 that was addressed by Representative Lee Perry of this last year, which went into effect on May 12th, 2020, actually provides that the council cannot do a no action. So at this point, the council may issue a letter of caution, suspension, or revocation, and that's where it leaves. I was going to leave this to the end. I apologize for not bringing it up before the cases were brought up, but it's been forever since, it feels like it's been forever since the legislative session. And so that was my error. But House Bill 43 amended 536-11 in regards to the post council's ability to take certain action. So you were now limited to letter of caution, suspension, revocation of the officer certification. And the council is also required to accept the administrative law judge's finding of fact and conclusion of law.
Thank you for that information, Marcus. I only did that because of the fact that in prior post council meetings, we have done that.
Yes, we have. And so with the new change in the statute, we're unable to do so. So, and just for some clarification in regards to BCI, so I also sit as counsel over the Bureau of Criminal Identification, and this is just more information just for the council. What happens is in high-profile cases, certain names are flagged. So, for instance, if we had Ted Bundy right now, his name would be flagged at BCI, both at the state level and at the federal level. And these high-profile cases are flagged so that it's limited to the jurisdiction that's in charge of those. so that we don't have a myriad of officers looking into these individuals. And another clarification point is UCGIS constitutes anything that is entered into UCGIS documents, which is criminal history and also driver's license. So if you access that, even through the Spielman Records database or your MDT or any of your local files, and it's going and it's hitting up against the Bureau of Criminal Identification information, which is UCGIS, it is still accessing BCI's information, which is subject to 53-10-108. So just clarification, not opining on this matter at all. This is just for clarification.
Thank you.
Chief Carpenter.
Sorry about that. What was that?
Chief Carpenter, Chad. So having worked with Sergeant Rogers in the past, I would recuse myself from the vote.
Okay. For the record, show Chief Soap has recused himself from the vote. With that, we don't have an official motion. We'll go ahead and call for a motion. Did you have additional?
This is Frank Budd. I will move that we accept the letter of caution recommendation.
So I have a motion from Frank Budd to accept the letter of caution. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Second from John Crowley. Do I have additional discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those opposed?
Chief.
Go ahead, Victoria.
This is Victoria. I have some, I guess, discomfort with this, echoing on some of the line of questioning that Colonel Rappich indicated. While in this case, I think it is perhaps similar, a recommendation for a letter of caution, I have some really strong concerns about the notion that anybody, any law enforcement officer in this state can see a story pop up, be it KSL, be it Salt Lake Tribune, be it any type of source, with nothing but an address, and we're going to essentially leave open the question or perhaps sanction that anybody with access to these systems can jump in and start pulling photographs of who lives at that home or who the suspect is, because I think that with kind of the line of reasoning that's been laid out, there's nothing that would prevent it from any resident, from an officer running any residence of the home or a victim or anything of that nature. So again, while I do understand that the letter is probably consistent with what we've done in the past, given the facts of this particular case and with limited and even conflicting discussion, I'm a little bit worried about how this sets us up going forward.
Did you have a substitute motion? Or was that just a statement, just for clarification?
I think that it's more of a statement than anything. But again, based on how this discussion has went related to this particular case, have concerns about messages that it sends. And as Director Stevenson had talked about Garrity violations earlier, I guess that's where I am concerned about. So I don't know if this is just an anomaly or if, again, this is something that we're going to see more of because somebody believes that the council, by agreeing with the letter of caution, has somehow implicitly sanctioned this activity.
Okay, thank you.
Chief, can I reply to that?
Yeah, please.
This is a sheriff. I brought that, Sheriff Noel. I brought it up. This isn't any officer. This is an officer that works in the same county where this murderer was at, number one. Number two, this isn't an officer that's checking on his daughter's boyfriend's license plate or some kind of a nefarious type. This is an officer doing his job, going out to find, he may be involved with this person at a later time. Any officer in the state could be. They're trying to obtain information, possibly to be on the lookout. I don't think he used any of the data for personal gain. He used it for professional gain, for knowledge for him to go out and potentially help in that case. If I'm wrong, correct me, but to say that any officer can pull up any cases or Ted Bundy, I don't agree with that at all. Again, I'm going to stick with my thought that he was doing what he was supposed to be doing.
And Sheriff, I guess I understand that concern, but isn't it more appropriate for somebody to ask, like the primary agency, or to wait for a bolo, or to do something of that? My concern is that, I mean, I think it might have been different if it was in a briefing for a task force, and certainly then they might have, where they were asking for help. But the idea that a line officer can just unilaterally and independently insert him or herself into any investigation, be it for a suspect or a victim or anybody else, I think that, again, that's just where there's some concerns.
With that, any additional from counsel? I'll go ahead, and I think we have a first and a second. We had discussion. I'm going to go ahead and call for the vote. Those opposed, if you oppose, please call out by name.
Chief, is the motion to accept?
Sorry, the motion is to accept, yes.
Letter of caution.
Letter of caution, which is the lowest level that we can accept based on the new legislation. For clarification. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Appreciate your time.
The next case is Logan Roseman. Is Logan Roseman or his counsel present?
We've got counsel. Logan is here as well as he's with his counsel, Mr. Willie.
Thank you. Mr. Roseman was an officer with the Lehigh Police Department. He had 10 and a half years of service as a peace officer. Sustained allegation is a BCI violation. The range is a letter of caution to 1.5 years. The baseline is 6 months, and POST is recommending a one-year suspension in this case. There are aggravators, and that's that there are a number of incidents, multiple information databases were used of government records. There was no criminal case, and there are no mitigators. This is a Class E offense. Logan Roseman was investigated by his department for the allegation of unauthorized access and use of BCI protected information. During the department internal investigation, a BCI dissemination log report or Roseman's user ID was requested. Roseman's department documented 8 inquiries generated through Spillman and 15 inquiries generated through Palantir by Roseman, which did not have a legitimate law enforcement purpose. A due process hearing was conducted on August 14, 2019. Roseman's department sustained the allegation of unauthorized use of personal protected information. Criminal charges were not filed on Roseman as employment was terminated with his department on September 2, 2019. During a post-Garrity interview with Roseman, he admitted to running his wife's classmates' protected information through multiple databases because he suspected her of having an affair. A USCIS audit log report of Roseman's user ID obtained by POST investigators documented 33 different USCIS searches, which were unlawful and unauthorized. The queries generated by Roseman were on April 29, 2019 and April 30, 2019, and consisted of name, driver's license, license plate, warrant, protective order, and NCIC searches. The queries were focused on a male individual who Roseman suspected his wife was having an affair, with whom he suspected his wife was having an affair. Mr. Roseman waived his right to a hearing. And again, the recommendation in this BCI violation case is 1 year suspension. Mr. Roseman, or your counsel, would you like to address post-counsel?
I'd like Mr. Roseman to address the council first,
please,
and then
Mr. Roseman,
and then I'll take a couple minutes. Thank you. I'm Logan Roseman. Thank you all for your time for being here.
The start of last year, give you a foundation on this, the start of last year, my wife at the time, she was telling me she was being stalked and harassed at school. And this happened in her bachelor's program. And now she claimed that it started happening in her master's program. So I contacted at the college she went to, the only officer I knew there. I contacted him and let him know what was going on. A couple weeks later, she said it happened again. And all that she knew that it's a white half-ton truck. And they were taking pictures of her and her car. So I contacted him again and let him know that it happened again. And if he could look at the cameras and watch the area. The second time I contacted him, that college, it doesn't have an investigations department or anything. He asked me if she suspected being someone in her class or anything like that, and I told him I had no idea. So he told me he'd review the camera footage and ex-patrol the area, and then he gave me the class roster to run individuals and see if they match, any of the vehicles will match an individual in their class. While doing that, and then with him reviewing camera footage, came to find out no one was talking or harassing her, and she was actually with this other guy. Up to then, I was running some names, and then I think I only ran his name, and then after I found out that she wasn't being stalked or harassed, I continued it, and I had no investigative purpose of doing so. Going through all this, I mean, I've been at Lehigh 10.5 years. I was in the academy at 20, graduated at 21 with a full-time job with Lehigh. I lived there. I planned to work there my whole life and stuff. This just happened. I went through a rough time in my life, and I made a mistake. It's on me. It's not with Lehigh, and I'm still close with the guys at Lehigh. They're like my brothers, you know, and this is all on me, and I had no investigative purpose to continue running his name after I knew that she was being stalked and harassed. And with my 10 and a half years at Lehigh, I was the youngest hired. I was the youngest on the SWAT team. I was youngest ever promoted there. I was just in a toxic, bad relationship. And to go from what I had to where I am now, I've lost everything except for 50-50 with my daughter. So, but no, I had no investigative purpose of running this guy after she told me that he was being stalked and harassed.
Any questions? Counsel?
All right, I've got a letter from the Grantsville City Police Department from Chief Jacob Enslin. I've got copies of that letter for anybody that wants to see a physical copy, but I'd like to just read that to counsel. It's addressed to Utah Post Disciplinary Counsel. He says, I submit this letter in hopes that it might provide useful information as to conducting the hearing for Logan Roseman. I have known Logan Roseman for approximately 12 years. I first met Logan Roseman as a member of the Lehigh SWAT team. We would hold physical training several days a week at the Lehigh Legacy Center. Logan, a recent high school graduate, began to show up at the same time and would participate in the training. Logan decided to pursue a career in law enforcement and was hired by the Lehigh Police Department in 2009. About 4 years later, we'd select him to become a member of the Lehigh SWAT team. I served with Logan, including many years as his supervisor in patrol, investigations, and SWAT, and until March 2017 when I accepted the chief of police position for Grantsville City Police Department. I have always had a high regard for Logan's character and accomplishments. You could count on Logan to do a competent professional job. I do not recall ever having disciplinary issues with Logan. He was a hard worker and someone you could count on not to just respond to dispatch calls, but also to make our community safer by proactively seeking out criminal activity. He was well-trained and holds many certifications, making him a valuable asset to any department. We are currently hiring in Grantsville, and like all the departments, are desperate to find quality, experienced officers. I was excited to see Logan Roseman apply for one of our positions. We are in the process of doing his background check and anxiously await the results of your investigation so that we may have the information necessary to make the best choice for our department. During the background, I saw letters of commendation and a promotion, evidence of a quality officer I knew Logan Roseman or Logan to be, followed by uncharacteristic mistakes that coincided with what appeared to be a toxic relationship. Also spoke to Lehigh Chief Darren Paul, who concurred with this, that assessment and recommended him as a quality officer for a department that could give him a fresh start. During our interview with Logan, he was upfront and honest about his situation. Though we knew some of his troubles, we did not have to ask him about them. He owned his mistakes and recognized the importance of a stable personal life plays in ability to control emotions and make good decisions. He is committed to learning from his mistakes. I believe that he is ready to put the experience behind him and resume his career wiser because of it. I hope to see such a quality officer back in the streets soon. Our communities are safer with Logan, with Officer Roseman patrolling them. Should you have any questions, feel free to contact me. And he provides his phone number, which I'm happy to provide in a private setting. Jacob Enslin, Chief of Police. I want to just speak also to some comparables. And
agencies aren't permissible at this hearing. Only the letter from the employer is permissible.
Pardon? Only the letter from the employer is what you're saying is admissible?
Only the letter from the employer is permissible. A letter from an outside agency is, or an outside person or someone other than the employer is not admissible at the hearing.
Okay.
And I just want to clarify this. This agency would like to hire as soon as this case is resolved and he's eligible for employment.
So if they're not the current agency, then that is not admissible, is my understanding.
If they are
the current agency, then they can include
that. Correct. So a chief or sheriff or administrative officer may provide additional information to either support or provide additional information to the post counsel. This essentially acts as it's hearsay. It's a little different than we've ever considered. So it's however you want to take it, Chair.
Well, we've already heard it, so it's kind of hard to hear.
It's very true. Right. And my apologies. There was an understanding that my understanding was it was from the employer, and I did not know it was not from the employer. So my error, I apologize.
Thank you.
Let me ask a question, Counsel. Were you aware of that before you read that letter?
No, I wasn't. So we talked about aggravators and mitigators when we started this. Ms. Vitti said there's no mitigators. I want to point out I'm counting, several cases throughout the last year from Robert Higdon, Sean Bell, Courtney Pay, and numerous others that one of the mitigators that's frequently considered is that the officer did not disseminate the information. Ms. Vitti, do you have any objection to that being a mitigator?
I would have to defer to the investigator in this case.
Okay.
The investigator here?
Yes, I am. This is Sergeant Adams. Apologize. Yes.
What we've submitted.
Okay. I don't believe there's any disseminations of the information based on the notice of agency action. So just moving to a few comparables. In 2017, Robin Taylor made 5 BCI inquiries and not for a legitimate law enforcement purpose and received a 1-year suspension. 2016, Holly Ziegenhorn made 5 BCI inquiries for family. So those were disseminated and received a 6-month suspension. 2015, Trevor Pearson made a BCI inquiry and provided it to a friend and received a 3-month suspension. And 2012, Nicholas Riggs made BCI inquiries for a vehicle near the home of his estranged wife and received a 3-month suspension. So I get, what we're requesting is that Pulse Council reduce the suspension down to 9 months and date that suspension from the time that he terminated employment with Lehigh PD.
Essentially, we have 2.5 months left on the suspension. Is that correct?
So, no, that would bring him current as of today or very close to being current, sir.
If okay, because yeah, my understanding was we had, 2.5 months to complete that he's already served.
So he,
how many months?
So he was terminated in September, early September last year.
That's my second.
Yeah, so we're 9 months right about now.
All right. Any questions for counsel? With that in mind, do I have a motion?
Well,
Ms. Beattie, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the cases that were cited were not cases where the officer ran strangers in BCI, people they had no relationship with. You know, most of these BCI cases, not always, but in most of them, the officers are running, you know, their wives' insurance information. And I don't believe the cases that were cited, only one of them I recall very clearly off the top of my head, but I don't believe those cases involved strangers. I believe those involved family members. If I'm wrong, let me know, but I think they're distinguishable.
Any questions for Ms. Beattie?
Alan Swanson, I'd like to make a motion.
Got a motion from Chief Swanson.
I would motion for a 9-month suspension.
I have a motion for a 9-month suspension. Do I have a second?
Christy Morin, second.
I have a second from Christy Morin. Do I have further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those opposed?
This is Victoria. I'm opposed on this one.
I have Victoria as opposed. Any other opposition? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Steve Sargent. Steve Sargent, or counsel for Steve Sargent, present.
Mr. Sargent is here. Do you have counsel with you? Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Beattie.
Okay, no counsel present?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sargent has 13 and a half years of service. He was employed, or he still is employed, I'm sorry, by the Utah Department of Corrections. The sustained allegation in this case is possessing items prohibited in a correctional facility. The range is 1.5 year suspension to revocation. The baseline is 3-year suspension. And Post is recommending a 2-year suspension. This is a Class B as in boy offense. There are no aggravators, and the mitigators in this case are that, or the mitigator is that the offense is fairly minimal. It's personal use involved. Steve Sargent was investigated for bringing alcohol onto prison property and consuming some of the beverage. Sargent, an optometrist for the department, arrived early for work. While sitting in his vehicle, he opened a can of alcoholic beverage in the parking lot of the prison. Sargent consumed some of the beverage, relaxed for about an hour, and then reported to his shift. A department employee observed Sargent with the alcoholic beverage in his hand and reported the incident. At lunchtime, Sargent returned to his vehicle and consumed more of the beverage. When Sargent's break was over, he entered the prison building and was stopped by the warden. The warden asked Sargent if he was drinking alcohol in his vehicle, and Sargent admitted he was. During department and post-Garrity interviews, Sargent admitted to purchasing the alcohol the night before the incident, driving to work in his personal vehicle, and consuming the alcohol on prison property in the parking lot. Sargent's department sustained several policy violations. Criminal charges were not screened for the county attorney, and this case was resolved by a waiver. The recommendation, again, is 2 years, and the certifications are SFO and BCO. But he's an optometrist. That's all I have.
Any questions for Ms. Vitti?
I got a question, Alan Swanson. What you said, no criminal charges. Were there potentially criminal charges?
They weren't screened. No criminal charges were screened.
Okay.
Any additional questions? Mr. Sergeant, would you like to address the council?
Yeah, I would. Yes, I did exactly what was stated there. I'm going through a very difficult time with my wife, which we were estranged, and I did have a can of alcohol in my car, and I didn't sleep the night before and went to work, got there, woke up an hour before I normally go to work. I drive down to Gunnison. It's about a 2.5-hour drive from Camas, which is where I live. Got there early, had an hour, and I did have a drink of the alcohol, had a couple of drinks. Didn't consume all the alcohol between drinking in the morning, having a couple of drinks, and having a couple of drinks at lunch. I did that. It was completely stupid. I'm completely ashamed of what I did. I know it's completely wrong. Not here to take anything away from that. I'm just here to ask the council to make it possible, if the suspension to be short enough that I could recertify. I've enjoyed being an officer. I've enjoyed the training. I enjoy being with the prison and being around officers. And my only plea would be to, if suspension is possible, to be a duration that I could come back and do physical training and recertify if possible.
Any questions for Mr. Sergeant?
Alan Swanson, I have a question.
Go ahead.
According to this, it says you are still employed. What do they have you doing?
I am the optometrist for the prison, for both facilities, Gunnison and Draper.
Anything additional?
And I'd like to add, yeah, I just need to add, I didn't mention it before, that Mr. Sergeant received 16 hours without pay by his agency.
Have you already received that?
Yes, sir.
Any time off?
I did do administrative time off, yes. Three weeks.
How much time was that?
3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Yes.
And was that without pay or with pay?
That was with pay. Then I did 16 without pay.
Any further questions?
This is Chris Warren. I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering what steps you've taken personally to work through your situation.
Yes,
I've gone through counseling.
Went through counseling. It started in February, and I'm still going, and actually we're about to terminate it. So, yes, I've done counseling. Yeah. And I did UA testing for 6-7 weeks.
Hey, this is Alan Swanson. Sorry, I have another question. It seems like on our past DUI cases, we've been only given out a year to a year and a half. Why the recommendation for 2 years on this?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I apologize. This is Sergeant Adams. It's due to the fact that the classification of the criminal offense puts it in the higher category. And so that's how come the baseline is, I believe the baseline on it is 3 years. I believe it's a Class A misdemeanor. I'm shuffling through my papers right now, but I believe it's a Class A misdemeanor to bring the intoxicants onto the property of a controlled facility. And so that upped it to a higher offense than the DUI, if that makes sense.
Okay. So the parking lot outside is considered part of the facility, I'm assuming that?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
But there were no criminal charges screened?
No, sir. There were not.
So not screened and denied, just not screened.
Right. You're correct. They weren't screened at all.
Mark, I just have a question for you. What was the lowest we could go on this? A year and a half? Is that what I heard?
Give me one sec.
The range is 1.5 years to revocation, but for Class B, for possessing an item for this particular offense as a Class B.
Okay.
Yep. Category. Okay,
so get off and see if anyone else has any questions.
That is correct.
Any additional questions? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion. Go ahead, Colonel Rappage.
Make a motion to amend the suspension to 1.5 years for the minimum classes for Category B.
I have a recommendation from Colonel Rappage to amend the post recommendation from 2 years to 1.5 years, which I believe is Schedule B. Is that correct? Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, I missed who the second was, sorry. Was that
Alan?
Chief Swanson? Okay, I have a first and a second. Go ahead, all those in favor. Sorry, I'll go ahead. Do we have any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Suzanne Skirvin. I see that Ms. Skirvin and her attorney are present.
Ms. Skirvin is here. Go ahead, Ms. Vitti. You have counsel here. Sorry. Mr. Jensen, or Mr. Willie, I apologize for that.
Suzanne Skirvin is employed by the Draper Police Department. She has 1 year of service. The sustained allegation is driving under the influence of alcohol, which is a Class D as in dog Class D as in dog offense, Category D offense. The range is 1 month to 3 months to 2.5 years. The baseline is 1 year, and post is recommending 1.5 years. The aggravator in this case is that she was double the legal limit. There are no mitigators. The criminal case is still pending. Her agency sustained the DUI, but I don't have any information about any other action they took in terms of time off. Suzanne Skirvin was pulled over for traffic violations, and the officer smelled the odor of alcohol coming from her vehicle. The officer asked Skirvin if she'd been consuming alcohol earlier that evening. Skirvin said she had. She was investigated for suspicion of driving under the influence of alcohol. The officer had her perform standardized field sobriety tests. After the conclusion of the tests and obtaining a positive PBT result, Skirvin was arrested and transported to the office for a chemical test. She submitted to an intoxilizer test, which registered a result of 0.114 blood alcohol content. She was issued a citation for driving under the influence of alcohol and released to a responsible party. An internal investigation was conducted and it included a Garrity interview. During the Garrity interview, Skirvin said she had concerns with the original reason for the stop, as well as the administration of the field sobriety tests and the observations of the Baker rule. Skirvin's department sustained the allegation of driving while impaired, and Skirvin resigned from the department. Post-investigation was conducted and included a Garrity interview with Skirvin. Skirvin admitted to consuming at least 2 mixed drinks, a bottle of beer, and 1 shot of liquor at a local bar prior to the traffic stop. During the interview, she said she didn't dispute the PBT or intoxilizer results, but she, and when asked if she felt she violated the laws that pertain to DUI, the DUI statute, she said, yes, I did. I broke the law. The criminal case is still pending, however. She waived her right to a hearing at post. So the post is recommending 1.5 year suspension.
For the record, Spence Austin will be recusing himself on this case. And then I heard something else in the background. Was somebody else making a comment? Thanks, Ms. Beatty. Ms. Skirvin, would you like to address the council?
Yes, please.
Please.
So I just would like to first off state that I take full responsibility of what happened that night. I did make an honest mistake, and I have realized and have seen the repercussions that come with breaking the law. I had never broken the law or had had any hiccups that way regarding the loss before, prior to that day. And I would just like to say that with COVID and everything happening, I have had the opportunity to have a lot of time to think about my actions and things. And I do know that it was my full responsibility. I was behind that wheel, and I take full initiative of what happened. I left my department on good terms. Everything ran smoothly as it could run from what had happened. I am a little bit nervous today addressing you guys because it is humiliating. I've always wanted to serve my country and be a part of the community. And I have conquered a lot of trials in my life. And I would say that this day was the worst day of my life. And I don't say that lightly because I am an advocate for human trafficking survivors, and I'm a survivor myself. And for me to say that having my badge, my patrol vehicle, and my handgun taken away and arrested was the worst day of my life is a pretty harsh statement. And it was. I worked so hard being a single mom of a 3-year-old boy, having my baby and going into the academy right after. And with one decision that I made, it was all stripped away. And since then, I'm enrolled back in school, and I continue to serve my community as on different organizations with involving human trafficking. And I continue to strive to be a better person. I am in therapy. And I, since then, have been surrounding myself with people that have the best intentions for me.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. Council, do you have anything additional?
Thank you. I'd like just to speak to a few comparables. I'm going to, go over three and just keep it brief. December 2017, Justin Jones was arrested for DUI. He had a BAC of 0.113, which is very similar to this case. He received a 1-year suspension, which is the baseline. In March 24th, 2016, Cheryl Pickett had a BAC of 0.121 and received a 1-year suspension. On June 22nd, 2015, John Lyle was arrested for DUI, had a 0.110 and received a 1-year suspension. I think, probably during this time, the legal limits have changed, but the actual limits of what they appeared before council, or the actual readings when these people appeared before council are very similar. So I'd request a baseline suspension of 1 year on this particular instance. Are there any questions?
Any questions for council? Thank you. Ms. Beatty, anything in addition?
Nothing additional, thank you.
That we'll go ahead and call for a motion. I have a motion to accept from Colonel Rappage. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a second from John Crowley. Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, ma'am.
Just for clarification, this is from December?
Correct, from the date of suspension without pay.
Sir, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Andrew Vickery.
He is not here, nor does he have counsel present.
Okay. Andrew Vickery had been employed by the Unified Police Department. He had 3 years of service. He resigned on May 14th, 2019. The sustained allegation in this case is assault, although he entered a plea of guilty to disorderly conduct and retaliation against a witness or victim, criminal mischief, and a Garrity violation. Those are the sustained allegations. These are category A, C, and D offenses. The range is 3 years to revocation. The baseline is revocation, and Post is recommending revocation in this case. The aggravator in this case is that there are multiple charges on multiple dates. There is no mitigator. The criminal case resulted in a plea of guilty to disorderly conduct. And felony 3 retaliation and felony 3 criminal mischief charges were set for a hearing on April 7th, 2020. I don't know if the investigator has an update on that. Dusty, do you have an update on the result of the two charges that were set for a hearing, set for a court date on April 7th? Dusty?
I don't. I failed.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't, Linda.
Okay, thank you. Andrew Vickery, a certified law enforcement officer, was investigated by a local agency for assault at a local bar. The person assaulted was an employee at the bar. The assault charge was filed and later amended to disorderly conduct, to which he pled guilty. During his agency's internal investigation and a Garrity interview, Vickery was asked multiple times if he made any contact or attempted to push the bar employee in any way. Vickery was adamant that he did not touch or push the employee, even after being reminded that there was video surveillance. The surveillance video shows there was an altercation, and Vickery grabbed the employee's arm and pushed the employee away from him. Months later, Vickery was investigated by a local agency for retaliation against a witness, victim, or informant, and criminal mischief. The investigation showed Vickery returned to the same bar where the assault occurred. He used a knife to destroy two patio awnings. He also damaged the water shutoff and two toilets, causing the water to overflow and resulting in water damage to the building and the heating system of the building, of the business. Charges were filed for retaliation against a witness, victim, or informant, a third-degree felony, and criminal mischief, a third-degree felony. Vickery's court date was April 20th. We have the charges as pending. I don't know if those are resolved. Perhaps Mr. Vickery can help us, or we can look that up right now. This case was resolved by default. So can someone look up to find out what happened to those other two charges? Dusty, anyone?
Case. I was going to send it to Marcus.
Yeah. This is Alan Swanson. I'll be honest with you, I don't know that it really even matters. He was caught on video. So if we're ready to make a motion, I would make one. And that would be that we follow Post recommendation.
Do we have any further discussion?
We have a motion from Chief Swanson to accept post recommendation. I have a second from Spence Austin and a voice message from, sorry. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you.
Okay, I believe this is the last case. Morgan York.
Mr. York, she's not here, or Mrs. York, she's not here, nor is her legal counsel. Go ahead, Ms. Vitti.
Okay, thank you. Morgan York was employed for, she had 11 years of service. She was employed by the Utah Department of Corrections and was terminated. Her date of separation was October 29th, 2019. The sustained allegations in this case, the sustained allegations of retail theft, which is a Class D offense. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years. The baseline is 1 year, and POST is recommending 1.5 years. The aggravator in this case is that she had a previous POST suspension in 2019. It was the case, if I recall correctly, involving a fight in the driveway over with a domestic dispute over a PlayStation. Am I correct about that, Sergeant Barnett?
Sergeant Barnett, yes, Linda, that was a dispute with her husband over a video game console.
Okay, I think some of you might recall that case. In the criminal case in this matter, she entered a plea of no contest to the charge of retail theft to a Class C misdemeanor. She was terminated by the Department of Corrections. Morgan York was investigated by a local police agency for retail theft. The investigation disclosed that York went to a local store to purchase items for her new residence. York was observed by an employee switching price tags from cheaper items and placing them on more expensive items in order to pay less money for those items. York went to the self-checkout, paid $187.03 less than the actual cost. The employee contacted the local police agency. Local police interviewed York after advising her of her Miranda rights. She admitted to switching the price tags on certain items. She was given a citation for retail theft and released. She then entered a plea of no contest to attempted retail theft, a Class C misdemeanor. During the Garrity interview with her department, she admitted going to a local store and switching the price tags on the items in order to pay a lower price. She was terminated by her agency on October 29th, 2019. Contacted POST and asked that the case move forward without her participation, so an order of default was entered against her. That's all.
Any questions for Ms. Vitti? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for a motion.
Chief Silf, I make a motion that we follow POST recommendations.
I have a motion from Chief Silf to follow POST recommendations. Do I have a second? I have a second from Colonel Rappage. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those opposed? There's no opposed, the motion carries. That is the end of that. However, Mr. Yaki, I believe you wanted to address POST counsel on an additional issue.
So it's just follow up on House Bill 43. If you recall, so I was actually going to do this at the end, and I apologize. I should have done it at the beginning, but like I said, with the COVID thing, I don't even know what day it is. so this has been quite crazy these last few months. So as stated, Lee Perry passed the bill that amended some of the provisions for POST counsel. This was in regards to that appeal that we had, I believe, last year that went up to the Court of Appeals. And so it was determined that instead of having POST counsel act as an appellate body, it'd be better as a sanctioning body. So for clarification, POST is POST counsel is more or less the sentencing body. I imagine if somebody gets goes to court and gets is found guilty of an offense, then post counsel would act would consider mitigators or aggravators and determine how to proceed on that information. So the statute changed for both peace officers and for dispatchers. The council is limited to letter of caution, suspension, revocations, and they must now accept the ALJ's findings. And again, that's not to take power away from the post council. It's just to put it better in line with the actual functions of the post council and not have it as an appellate body so that it's not considering multiple factors. There is one additional change that's found in 6B. If a peace officer, this was actually a really big change with the legislature. They're the ones that put it in. If a peace officer who is the subject of an internal or administrative investigation into allegations that include any conditions or circumstances outlined in subsection one, which is lying under Garrity, criminal violations, sex on duty, all the reasons that post counsel can take action. So if they resign or retire or otherwise separate from the investigating law enforcement agency before the conclusion of the investigation, the chief sheriff or administrative officer of that law enforcement agency shall report the allegations. This ensures that the what was happening is we actually had a lot of individuals that were separating from their law enforcement agencies before the conclusion of the investigation, and then it wasn't sent to post because nothing was actually substantiated. But this ensures that post can better post and post counsel can better look at that, and I think it helps in line with everything that's happening nowadays. Yeah, if anybody has any questions or concerns, please let me know.
I can add a little more context. Remember the Auditor General. Dougal conducted an audit on post and found seven to eight cases that should have been reported to post. So we're just trying to shore up that hole to not report those cases and allow post to get their eyes on it to determine whether it's a certification issue. And again, it's about education. A lot of administrators need to understand it's a bifurcated process. We're in charge of the employment side. We're in charge of the certification side, and I hope this deters agencies from just not giving us that information because we don't want to be having officers stay ahead of discipline. We want to make sure that we're catching and taking the appropriate action with those violations.
Any other questions or concerns?
Hearing none. Thank you, Mr. Yockey.
I have one question. Oh, sorry, for Marcus. This has always been a pet peeve of mine in the past when chiefs are required to report stuff and they don't. Is there some kind of penalty attached for those chiefs that don't do that? Because I think there should be. But.
So we worked on that a little bit. The penalty right now is, so if you fail to do that, you come before post counsel. So post counsel essentially have them come before, but there is no criminal penalty or civil fine or anything like that attached.
Okay. Just the embarrassment of coming before post counsel.
Yeah. I know Scott, Director Stevenson worked. There was some discussion about attaching some sort of penalty, but I know, that went back and forth in the legislature. So right now it's just coming for post counsel would be the punishment.
Yeah, it's just for future conversation. I think there needs to be a little teeth in it to force everyone to comply, but that's just my opinion.
So Chief, I think this was probably five years ago, I sent out an email to both associations with the idea of adding a sanction to not reporting. At the time, it was a Class B misdemeanor, and I didn't receive any feedback, so I had Representative Greenwood at the time run the bill, and it was not well received, to say the least. And you may have been in the
room. I was actually.
Barely made out of there with my life.
We had a lot of chiefs and sheriffs that opposed it. Additionally, I believe, I was on the chief's board at the time as well, and we brought that up. and we discussed it for several hours and could not come up with a resolution to move forward with that. I, too, feel that if they're not reporting, then they're part of the problem. I completely agree with that. Unfortunately, there are a lot that didn't agree with that. So.
Okay, well, maybe in the future we can have these discussions about not just coming before post, but actually post council having the ability to affect their certification, just like we do officers, because that would be some teeth. It doesn't have to be criminal, but just food for thought.
This is Frank Buck. I remember when we went through this, Terry Keefe was the chair of the council at the time, I think. But what I do remember is that Scott, as he say, he barely escaped with his life. I don't think he'd be too eager to take that one on again unless he has a lot of support.
Thank you, Frank, for that. Yes, that is true. I would like a lot of support if we're going to approach that topic again.
Any additional questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and look to schedule our next meeting.
Can we do the last week sheriff's conference? Is that a go or is that still undetermined?
This is Sheriff Curtis. It got canceled.
Okay. Can we go for the last week of September? Like the 30th? It's a Wednesday? Or is that... Okay, hunters, is that messing up with the hunting season?
You could. I haven't looked at my tank stuff yet.
All right, let's go mid-September?
What about the second week?
Of September?
Yeah.
So the 9th?
Yes.
Okay.
That does interfere with archery gear, but...
We'll make an exception.
We're making concessions.
All right. So the 9th, September. 10 o'clock. I think it's safe to assume this will be under the same conditions and format as today. If things do change and there's a vaccine, then we can change things up. But as of right now, we'll have the same structure.
So, Scott, just for follow-up on that, so the executive order on the meeting, we can still have it electronically because our DPS's rule allows for the electronic meeting, so we can still have members appear electronically. Depending on where the executive order sits and public members, we may have more public there, so just keep that in the back of your mind because the executive order is what keeps them out right now. But September is quite a bit of time away, so.
Thank you. Will do.
With that, we have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We have one from Spence Austin. We have a second.
Second.
Second from Colonel Rappage. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Travel safely. We appreciate your time.